My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Vibes are high on a Friday because we're making Beverly Hills Cop references in the chatty house.
That's amazing.
That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders. We're hanging out with you until noon, and then we will hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and they will take you into the weekend here on Sacramento Sports Leader. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. Having a good time today. Just taking a look around the NBA. We spend so much time so hyper-focused on the Kings that it's fun to kind of zoom out and look at the league as a whole. And I think kind of where I'm at, James, is while in the West specifically, I'm not going to talk about the East right now, but in the West specifically, while the Kings' first 54 games didn't go probably the way we anticipated they would, I'm guessing if we had done just like a game-by-game prediction through the first half, we'd be sitting with the Kings at probably like 30 or 35 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting at 31, which, again, not the end of the world. You're 8 games over. But I think we've seen the last couple of games, and frankly, what we've seen from the West, the rest of the West this season, it's not out of the question to me that the Kings can get on a little run here where they comfortably get back up into a playoff spot instead of lounging around in the number 8 seed where they are to second half.
No, I'm with
you.
That's
kind of been the takeaway for me.
Yeah, that can totally happen. The Kings could get right back in this thing. And you know, it's not like they're out of this thing. They are 7 games over 500 or whatever it is at this point.
Eight.
They're back to 8 games over 500.
Yeah.
So I'm not convinced that they're a bad team. But what you have to understand is the West is like really, really good, and they don't stand out. And not only that, but we can keep going through like who you think they could beat and couldn't beat in a playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not to the point where they're in a playoff series. They're the 8 seed. The 8 seed is not a playoff team. It's a play-in team, and you still have to earn your way into the playoffs. And that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And the teams that you could be competing for are literally the teams that the NBA wants to see there. So, like, let's not act like that the Lakers aren't going to get good calls, or that the Golden State Warriors aren't going to get good calls. They're going to. And so you're going to have to beat those teams, not narrowly beat them. You're going to have to thump those teams to get into the playoffs. That's not where you want to be. Like, this team is a 5th or 6th seed at the end of this, you know, run here, then sure, then you're in, right? And you feel confident about what's next. But that's just not who they are and where they are right now. And so I don't want to, you know, like it matters. It matters where you are in the standings. And as of right now, it's an uncomfortable place to be in. And you need to win. And the problem that you have is that you still have, you know, a difficult stretch here coming out of the break where it's, you know, it's the Spurs, but then it's the Clippers, the Heat, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves. And then, you know, maybe you can beat the Bulls and you got the Lakers and you got the Spurs and the Rockets and all of a sudden you can start stringing together something here. But still, like, you got to prove it because as of right now, you haven't proven that you can beat a team like the Spurs on a Tuesday night or Thursday night. You haven't,
That's a good point.
We want to start counting games that they could win. You know, should you beat on March 4th? Should you beat the Bulls at home? Yes, you should. But this team hasn't earned that respect.
Right. That's a good point.
They haven't.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you got this three-game stretch where it's Toronto, Washington Wizards, and Orlando Magic. That could be 3-0. It could be 1-3. I mean, 1-2. It could be 2-1, but, like, you beat Orlando and you beat the Raptors, but you lose to the Wizards. And that's who this team has been all season long, and we can't predict that they would be something other than that because when someone shows you who they are, you should probably believe it. Right.
Yeah, but we saw this same team. We talk about it. This is the same team as last year, and last year this was not nearly the same problem.
No, it wasn't
on a night in, night out basis. You didn't know what you were going to get. You knew what you were going to get, and sometimes the shots fell, sometimes they didn't. But you knew that you were going to get a good De'Aaron Fox fourth quarter, and you knew you were going to get Kevin Herter shooting it well, and you were going to get your near triple double from Domas and all this and that. But this year, you haven't been able, outside of the Domas stuff, you haven't been able to really rely on anything on a night-in, night-out basis. And if they come out and they smoke the Spurs, and then maybe you beat the Clippers and you play really well, okay, maybe now we see, okay, the switch flipped, right?
Yeah.
That's the famous phrase in the NBA, is flipping the switch. And maybe then we can kind of start to go there. But you're right, man. Until, like, should they beat the Spurs? Yes. They're a better team than the Spurs. Should they beat the Bulls and the Heat? Like, yeah, no doubt. Like, 1,000% they should. But we've also seen them go to overtime with a shorthanded Blazers team and lose to the Blazers and lose to the Hornets and turn in just kind of sad performances against teams like Houston.
Yeah, I'm going through the list of last season, and I'm trying to circle, like, bad losses, right? They had a bad loss late in the season against the Jazz. They had a bad loss early in the season against Charlotte. So, you know, like, wipe out the first four games of the season where you had no idea who the Kings were going to be.
Yeah.
But either way, they played the Blazers, the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Grizzlies in the first four games of the season, and the Blazers was at home. This is to open last season. They go 0-4, right? Mm. After that, there are no bad losses. You lose to Atlanta. But Atlanta's on the second night of a back-to-back where you played in Memphis and then had to get to Atlanta and you lose on the second night of a back-to-back. That's not a bad loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go,
it's just losing.
Yeah, you lose to the, and then you lose to the Celtics and you lose to the Suns. Okay, that's fine. You lose to the Bucks, you lose to the Knicks, and you lose to Philly. Okay, those are reasonable losses in the NBA. You can point to a couple losses here in one stretch in December where you lost at home to Charlotte. And then you let the Wizards come in and beat you.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, it's teams like Denver. It's teams like Memphis. It's, you know, teams like the Lakers that beat you here and there. Philadelphia, Toronto, Minnesota, playoff teams last season.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. It's okay to lose playoff teams. There weren't these games where, again, late in the season, at the end of a long road trip, you got a six-game road trip. The Kings walked into Houston and beat them on a Monday and beat them on a Wednesday. That's the difference between this year's team and last year's team. The Kings walked in early in the season to two games against the Houston Rockets, didn't take them serious, and got their butts kicked.
Yep.
Okay.
And you keep the disappointing part is you early in the year this year you kept expecting them to be like, okay, that's going to wake them up. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's now they're awake. Now they're going to get, and they just never really have. It's like when you're trying to start a car and it just won't turn over.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how the Kings have felt all year. And maybe the second half will be better. Maybe they'll be more effective closing out games. They won't play down to their opponent, and they'll start, you know, beating the heck out of teams like San Antonio and Portland and Memphis, and maybe that's what we see. But you're right. Until we see it this year, I'm not leaning on 22-23 anymore to inform me about this year's Kings team, because it's clearly not the same.
Yeah, and Kyle, just to continue your car, like, the Kings have got it going a couple of times, but then one of the cylinders dies, and you hear it like donk, 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 you hear, and then all of a sudden you have a backfire. We've seen a couple of backfires from this team. Like, sometimes they're on eight cylinders, sometimes they're on six with an eight cylinder, and they're just misfiring, and you can hear it. Like, you're watching a team, you're like, they're just misfiring again. I don't know what the problem is or how to put my finger on it and say, hey, that's the problem, stop doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so that's where I think that they have to grow up a little bit as a team. Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying they're immature, but like, that's what they act like. They act like they're a team that hasn't grown up and realized who they should be and played to that. And until they do that, they can't expect to walk in and beat teams, because that's not the NBA.
Yeah. They talked a lot about taking that next step. And how much, I feel like we talked about this so much during the offseason, but Mike Brown talking about going from bad to good is the easy step. Going from good to great is the hard step.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels a little bit like Sacramento's approach the first half of this year as though, like, oh, okay, now they're just awarded that next step. Like, they've cleared the bad to the good step, and now they're just going to go throw their jerseys on the court and play, and that's how it's going to work. They're going to be great, and that's just not how it goes. So maybe the All-Star break reset will allow them to kind of refocus mentally and get back to where they were last season and approaching games the way they did then. But I got to see that first.
No, I'm with you. 100%.
The BOD. Yeah. All right. We've still got to give out some midseason awards. We'll do that. And then we're talking about what do the Kings do in the second half. We'll talk about what they need to do to kind of get where we're talking about them going, where they can get into that five or six seed. They are not way out of the race by any means. They are a half game back of the seven seed and a game and a half back of the Pelicans and Suns, who are tied for the fifth and sixth. What do they need to do to get up there? We'll talk about that as well. And we'll have the handoff. I believe Kenny Caraway will be coming in today for the handoff. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. That was fun. Eddie Murphy in the 80s, man. What a guy.
Loved it.
What a the run of movies he had was just totally outrageous. That's what we're talking about at the break. If you want to get in on those conversations, check out youtube.com/ESPN1320. When we go to break on the radio and in the app, we do not go to break on the video stream. We sit here and we chat, and we have a great time doing so. So please hop in there if that's how you would prefer to take in the show. James, let's give away some midseason awards. We've been talking about our surprises from this season so far, the good and the bad. We've talked a little bit about the Kings. What do they need to do to improve over the second half, quote unquote? And when we say second half, we mean post All-Star break.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely not half the games.
No. It's always a weird thing, you know, and that's why I hate that the trade deadline is so late in the season. I want to have teams have enough time to get to, like, acclimate a player into the system. So then that way we get to see what that team's potential could be. And I know it seems strange, but like 10 extra games would actually help that. 12 extra games would actually help a team like figure it out. And that's why the Kings, to be honest, they were willing to jump in and make a trade, but like considerably earlier than the actual trade deadline. They were willing to look at Pascal Siakam. They were willing to jump in on OG Anunoby, but it had to be like they were hoping for a trade earlier, and then they kind of let off that like coming to the actual deadline itself.
Yeah. All right, let's do midseason NBA award picks, and then we'll do some Kings superlatives, and we'll dive into the Kings in the next segment as well. So, James, who is your MVP pick at the All-Star break? And Jesse, I would like you to participate in this as well if you have a second. So, James, Jesse, we'll start with you, James. Who's your midseason MVP pick?
I'll just choose Jesse's form. I went with Jason Tatum.
Eric White.
Derek White.
Kyle knows. We're on the Derek White agenda all year.
Yeah.
Ball gang.
Like, look, I am a big proponent. Like, MVP should be the best player on the best team. Like, and if there's teams that are grouped together, that's one thing. But the fact is, Boston isn't grouped together with anyone else. They're 6 games up overall in the East, but 7 games in the win column. And over Eastern Conference teams, but they're 4 games up on anyone in the West as well. They've just separated themselves as the best team in the NBA. And like, I would love to tell you that if I were voting today, I'd probably give my vote to Jokic. But Jason Tatum right now, midway point of the season, best player, best team.
Yeah, I can't argue with any.
What about you, Jesse?
I can't argue with like any James Logic. He's best player on best team. Like, they're far and away. They're like you said, they're 4 games up on anyone else in the Western Conference, and like 6 game up on anyone in the East. But I don't think he's getting much of the votes this year. I think it'll be Jokic. I'd give it to Jokic right now. His numbers are just out of this world. And yeah, I think he's on his way to his third.
Tatum averaging 27, 8.6, and 4.8. 8.6 boards, 4.8 assists. I'm going to throw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's name in here.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he was my preseason pick, so I'm going to ride that. He's at 31.1 a game. He's shooting 37% from 3. That is just below his career high. He's 54.6% from the field, which is his career high. He's leading the league with 2.2 steals a game. And he is, we talked about it earlier, how really talented the Thunder are. He is just the clear-cut number one on what might be the best team in the West. So I'm gonna pick SGA at the midway point.
Okay. I think that's fair. I mean, he deserves like consideration. And I did the straw poll, the ESPN straw poll with Tim Bontemps, and I think I listed them Jokic number 1, number 2 SGA, number 3 Kawhi, number 4 Tatum, and number 5 Donovan Mitchell. That's how
Donovan Mitchell's a good name.
Yeah,
I got my eye on Kawhi too. I'm watching that one as the season goes on.
Oh, yeah. that's a good one too.
Yeah, I had Kawhi at number 3. Yeah. So I just think, you know, the way that the Cavs all of a sudden are 36-17 and are second in the Eastern Conference, and they keep plugging away. And they've had injuries here and there, but they just keep plugging away. And a lot of that is Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, no doubt. What about Defensive Player of the Year, James? Who do you got?
I've got Gobert. And I hate using the same logic, but the
best defensive player on the best defensive team?
Yeah, the T-Wolves are so much better than everyone else defensively. And he's a big reason for that. Jaden McDaniels is also a big reason for that. But for me, like I think that, you know, he fits the mold. He's been a defensive player of the year before, and he is sort of the anchor of that defense. Whether that works in the playoffs or not, we'll see. But for right now, that's who I'd go with.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Jaden again on this one.
Oh, go ahead, Jesse.
No, I'm just thinking with James again on this one. Like he said, best defensive player on the best defensive team. He's already got the history's won it before, so I think they'll give it to him this year.
I'm going with Victor Wembanyama. My man's averaging like 3.5 blocks a game.
Yes,
he had a triple-double with blocks.
He did.
I know there's more to defense than blocks, but that's nuts.
Yeah, I'm with you.
He's at 10 boards and I think 3.2 blocks in 28.6 minutes a game.
28.4, yeah. He also, Kyle, not only 3.2 blocks, but 1.1 steals per game. I mean, that's crazy. If for a rookie to come into the league and average 20.5, 10 rebounds, and 3.2 assists per game with 3.2 blocks and 1.1 steals. I know in fantasy basketball, my son like gave up everything so he could just draft Victor Wembanyama, so he'll have him for the next deck. It's like, okay, you won't be good this year, but you are good this year, but you're going to be great for years to come.
I follow somebody on Twitter who said they're going to start tracking a stat they call Hell Nas, and that's when players just decide not to shoot at the rim because of Wemby.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny. You watch Cam Thomas, who if you tell Cam Thomas to shoot it, he's not going to ask from where. He's just going to pull. And he will even drive, see Wemby, and like peel out and get rid of it. I mean, it is... He's special for sure.
Yeah.
What about rookie of the year, Jesse?
It's Wemby. He's putting up monster numbers with like 28 minutes per game right now. It's easily Wemby right now, I think.
Yeah.
I agree, James.
I think we all agree on this. I think Chet is way closer than we think he is. He probably is way closer. I mean, Chet's stats are spectacular as well. And the fact that he's doing it on a team that's second in the Western Conference right now, but you just can't ignore it. I mean, okay, so Chet's at 16.7 points, 7.6 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 2.6 blocks, and 0.7 steals, and he's shooting 39.3% from three. Like, man, Chet is really, really good.
He's very good.
I said it during that draft, if there was any way for the Kings to get him to pair alongside Sabonis,
it would have been perfect.
That would have been absolutely perfect. Yep. So didn't happen.
Can I one thing? Chet's not a rookie, so.
Well, yeah, but he didn't play.
Come on now, we know how the game is played.
I know. I'm just being funny.
Yeah, but I think he is eligible because he definitely is. Yeah,
he
redshirted. Yeah.
He is by NBA standards a rookie. For
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about most improved?
What do you got, Jesse?
What do you have, Kyle?
I have Tyrese Maxey. He's averaging 25.7, 3.7, and 6.4. And now he is charged with trying to keep the 76ers afloat in the East while Joel Embiid is out. I think Maxey has been stellar this season. I know he was in the most improved voting a couple of years ago. I think this is his year to win it.
I like that pick just because like he had to sit behind Harden last year and he's kind of just waiting for his time, and he's exploded this year and he's been everything they needed. So yeah, I like that pick too.
Yeah, I think he's a good selection, but for me it's Alperen Şengün. Şengün's averaging 21.2, 9.1, and he's averaging 5 assists per game, and he's on a team that's surprisingly better than people expected. And this is a second year player who's taken the leap. So I was in on Maxey originally, and then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to look around a little bit, and Şengün is a guy who stood out.
If Maxey can keep the Sixers afloat while Joel's out too, I think that'll be big time for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. What about sixth man of the year?
I think it's Malik Monk, and I don't think it's really that close.
Yeah, I think he's, what, 13 and 6 with assists coming off the bench right now. I mean, I'll take that over what Bobby Portis is doing right now and Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yeah, I know Hardaway Jr. is getting a lot of pub, but I don't know. I mean, you're looking at Monk is at 15 a game with 5.3 assists. He's got more 20-point games than any six man. He's got more 5 assist games than any six man. And so for me, he's the guy. I mean, he's just been so tremendous.
I love what Norman Powell is doing in L.A.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, no, I'm joking. He's been really good. It's Malik Monk, though. Malik Monk is the correct answer. Well, he's been stellar.
You look at these other guys too. Like Monk is, you could argue, has probably been the third most impactful player on the Kings this season, the third most important player on the Kings this season.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure if that's the case for like Bobby Portis or those other guys.
No,
I'm totally with you.
Yeah, I'm with you too. So I think we're all set.
Like Norman Powell's contributions are great, and Bobby Portis's are great, and Tim Hardaway, but I mean, we see it with Sacramento. When Malik Monk does not have a good game, it's really, really hard for the Kings to win.
Mm-hmm.
He is just super valuable in a way that I'm not sure those other guys are. Last one, Coach of the Year.
I've got Chris Finch.
Give it to my guy, Joe Mazzulla. Yeah. He's lapped the NBA right now. Give it to Joe Mazzulla.
Oh, my
God. Don't even do that. Don't even make that face. You're rolling your eyes on the stream. No, we won't even go to break. They're 6 games up in the East. All right, they're 4.5 games up on the Timberwolves. Give it to Joe, all right? Everyone says, oh, you can't coach, you can't call timeouts or whatever. Number one team in the East is Joe. It's Joe Mazzulla.
No. You could be Coach of the Year coaching a team that talented, for sure. No.
I don't buy into that. You know what? This show stinks. I'm out of here. I'm going to hang out with D'Lo and Casey later.
Mark Daigneault from OKC has done a heck of a job there. So that was my pick. I rock with the Joe Mazzulla idea, though. I think too many coaches get turned down for Coach of the Year because they have a good team, and I think that's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really dumb.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what the criteria is, if it's doing the most with less or turning a good roster into a great one. I don't know what the specific criteria people have are. But I don't hate the logic on the Mazzulla pick for sure.
Yeah, and Finch, I mean, he's leading the West, and his team was 42-40 last year, That's where I'm looking at. And you can say the same about Daigneault. They're both right there. They both have been excellent coaching their team this year.
All right, Relate, how did the Kings get better in the second half? We'll tell you next on ESPN 1320.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, final segment. We're rocking with you until noon. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We got D'Lo and KC coming up next, so stay locked in to ESPN 1320. Having a really fun chat today. Just an NBA-wide discussion, but I would like to narrow it back down to the Kings here, James. We've talked about surprises and disappointments around the league. We've given out some mid-season awards, or at least where we think those awards are going to go at the All-Star break. Obviously, so much movement happens with MVP and Sixth Man of the Year and all that. So much happens over the final post-All-Star break games. So we'll revisit those as the second half goes on. I want to do two things in this segment. One, I want to talk about what we need to see from the Kings in the second half. Three things this segment. That's the first one. The second one is I want to do some King superlatives. I'm going to throw these at you, and I would love to get your guys' thoughts on them. You, James, you in the chatty house, and of course, Jesse as well. And then I also want to talk about this question that came up in the chatty house during the break. YouTube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch.tv/ESPN1320 if you would like to participate in the chatty house. Young Sav asks, do we think Monty McNair is on the hot seat if no big moves happen in the offseason? And James, I think yes, but I only say that because we've seen the result of running it back with this team so far, and it has not worked. And it's just really clear that, at least to me, that this iteration of this roster is probably not one that's going to win a title. And if they're not making, and it depends, I guess, on what somebody defines as a big move, but if they're not making a significant change to their roster where they're adding a starter or maybe two and changing around what their bench looks like as a result, then yeah, I think you go into next year like, hey, there's a lot of pressure to do something more than make the first round of the playoffs in the third year of this.
Well, yeah, but I would even say before we even get to that, Kyle, because this team doesn't make the playoffs
this year.
Yes. If they don't, things are going to get a little noisy. Things are going to get a little uncomfortable. And I mean, like when you walk into an off season and your big moves are to trade for Chris Duarte, to bring in a 36-year-old or a 35 at that point, JaVale McGee, and to bring in Sasha Vezenkov from overseas after really the team, like behind the scenes put out there just how good they thought Sasha was going to be. And then you get to the midway point in the season and two of those guys are out of the rotation. One of them is out for a considerable amount of time and has been in and out of the rotation all year long. And then you get to the NBA trade deadline. And once again, you don't make a move. Your only move is to go get another $1 million or whatever it was from the Milwaukee Bucks for taking on Robin Lopez. Like, you've set the stage. Like, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, I don't know what happens.
Well, imagine you don't make the playoffs, and then I know we don't like to talk about it, but like, say Malik Monk goes somewhere else in free agency. Then this whole thing is just turned on its face where it's like, okay, now we've waited way too long for all of this, and now it's just red alert now.
Well, that's the problem. You waited, and I'm not sure what you waited for, because like it took like maybe 3 weeks into the season for you to realize that this team wasn't the same team it was last year.
Yep.
Like this thing was all over the board, and then 6 weeks in, you knew, like Mike Brown breaks the season down into 5-game increments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like every 5 games, like you could tell like something was off.
And, yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and so if you're a general manager, you had to be looking at the same thing. And I'm not saying, hey, like knee jerk reaction, like you gotta go do something to do something. No, like. If you have your team talking about championship contention, and then this is who you are, like this isn't a championship team. Like, barring some sort of weird situation where the San Francisco 49ers rolled through a bunch of teams that just you didn't expect to be there in the playoffs, and make it to a Super Bowl. Like, that's to me, this is. It's just a weird path that the Kings are on, and we keep talking about this, they're going to have all their picks this summer. If they don't make the playoffs, they don't have all their picks. If they don't make the playoffs, their 2024 is, they still have their 2024 first-round pick. They don't have access to their 25, 26, 27. You're looking at 28. Like, this becomes like a mess, a total mess, and there's a lot riding on the final 28 games of the season, not just for this group of players that want to play together, but also for the guys who constructed this roster. And running it back at this point seems like it looks a lot more like wasted a year, because that's where we're at. Like when your team, like I'm being like really honest here, that's what it looks like at this point. And you're wasting a year where your all-star center didn't make the all-star team despite the fact that he's one of the best players in the league, and you didn't make it because you're inconsistent and on some nights you're really bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where, you know, talking about Monty McNair being on the hot seat if no big moves happen in the offseason, if they don't make the playoffs, whatever it is. And that's where I think you can get away with saying, hey, ran it back. But you're right. It is a wasted year unless they use the information that they gathered and the data that they gathered this year to make a significant alteration to their roster.
Yeah.
Where they look and maybe they say, you know what, Malik Monk isn't the right guy, or Keegan Murray isn't the right guy, or whatever it is, where they are now making this massive swing like a Domantas Sabonis type of trade that just completely alters the direction of the team. Because right now, okay, they went up, but now they flattened. And it's just pretty clear they're just doing this. So how do they get going back the correct direction?
Yeah.
That I think is going to take a pretty significant swing. So to answer the question with a yes or no, if Monty's on the hot seat, if there's no big moves in the offseason, I would say yes at this point.
Yeah, I would say maybe. And I've also, like, we have a comment here. I'm going to pull it up. And it's CV says, are we too doom and gloom for just being year two? My question back to you would be, year two of what? Because if you don't make the playoffs,
good point.
Then that's not year two. You had 1 year where you made the playoffs. You were one and done. Mm-hmm. Now, can you get back there? And how do you fix what happened? That's where we're talking about. Like, I don't think it's doom and gloom. I'm just being realistic. Like, if you don't make the playoffs, like, this is not year two of anything. It's not.
Well, it's like we're hitting a turning point almost. Like, if they don't, like, if with the playoffs and stuff, if they do hit the playoffs, then you're kind of hitting the turning point where you're going the right way. You got your picks and all that, where you can move them in all the offseason. You don't. You're going the opposite direction where it's like, this window might be closing a little bit right now. Because, like, you just have less to work with at that point.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, but they did wait a little too long, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess that's kind of the point, is this year was supposed to be about growth. And this was supposed to be, okay, last year was year one, but now there are steps to take in year two. There's like a progression that happens, and that progression just isn't happening. And yeah. They didn't do anything to change that at the All-Star break, which may or may not have been, or not the All-Star break, but the trade deadline. And that may or may not have been the right thing to do. But if they go through this offseason and there's not a major change, and they, let's even say they make the first round, let's say they're in the play-in, they win their first play-in game, they're the seventh seed, they lose the 7-2 matchup against OKC or Minnesota or whoever it is. Like, let's just go to that. And then they go into next year with the same starting five and a Chris Duarte type of addition in the offseason. That's not enough.
At that point, we're all being conned, honestly. We're all being conned at that point if they're running it back again, leaving the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would say this. There's one caveat. The unless, Kyle, is if Keegan Murray becomes what everyone thinks, and that's who you get the final 28 games of the season, and Keegan Murray starts taking the steps, and that's where, for me, it's you're caught. If you're Mike Brown, you're stuck. Because the real thing that has to happen here, Mike wants to win games. And Mike he's on the hook. Like, that's what a head coach is. You're judged by wins and losses, right?
That's it.
But the real thing that should be happening at this point, because we know this isn't a championship team. We're honest. We're saying it. It's not. Like, whatever. I don't care. Mm-hmm. You're not a championship team. So the only way for you to take the next step is for you to add pieces for the outside, or for Keegan Murray and adding pieces. Keegan Murray to take a monstrous step. I got to see it now. And if that means that Harrison Barnes has to go back to who Harrison Barnes was the first half of the season, okay, that's what it is. Because at this point, you're pot committed in that aspect, that the way forward is for Keegan Murray to become your third best player. As of today, he's not. Your third best player is Malik Monk.
Do you think they have too many eggs in that basket? Like, he's a second-year player, and it's kind of like, we got Fox and Sabonis. Like, prime of their career is playing the best basketball of their career right now. And it's like, yes, like, you want to wait for Keegan Murray, but how long is that going to take? Like, we got to take advantage of your two best players playing great.
I get you, but it can't take any more time. Like, that's, like, Keegan Murray was a 21-year-old / 22-year-old rookie. He's 22, 23. I think he is 23 at this point, right? Like, you need to get there. Like, you were not banking on a 19-year-old Jonathan Kuminga. That's not what you were banking on. You were banking on a guy who was close, and he's been really good first year, second year. He's had some hits and misses, but he's still progressing. The third year is where you expect him to take the leap, where he's 18 to 20 points a game, and he's your third best player. And if not, it's time to go get your third best player. Like, that's kind of where you're at. So
he's playing three more minutes a game. He's taking 2.5 more shots per game, but the same amount of threes, and he's shooting them at a way worse clip.
Yeah.
That's going the wrong direction with him. But to your point, James, if they go 20-8 over the final 28 and Keegan Murray takes off and he averages 23 a game over that stretch, and he's consistent with it, it's not 23 by way of a bunch of 30-point games and a bunch of 6-point games. Like, he really is a 20 points a night dude.
Yep.
Then okay, we can change the conversation. But right now, there's no evidence that that's happening.
Hey man, if you go 16-12, but Keegan takes that leap, then I think everything is still on a path. But
yeah. So no pressure, Keegan.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, that's the downfall, right? Is that like everything's relying on the growth of one player, because we've seen optimized De'Aaron Fox, and you were still a couple of games over 500. We're seeing optimized Domantas Sabonis, and here you are 8 games over 500. We've seen optimized Malik Monk. You're 8 games over 500. Like we have to see what else there is. There has to be something else that you're building with. And yeah, it's an uncomfortable situation. I would say for sure, uncomfortable situation, because you can look at like an impatient owner that's been impatient throughout his, what is it? This is year 11. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
Time, man.
2013. He took over right before the Ben McLemore draft. This is, you know, it's one of where you have to show steady improvement and that there is a way forward. And if you can't, like, that's where this team always gets caught up. Hey, we got Casey joining.
Yeah.
I mean, we got D'Lo joining us.
We'll get it. What's going on, man?
We'll discuss how you can tell us apart later, James.
Happens to everyone, I guess.
Happens to us all the time at the arena.
It's my brain.
We were once mistaken for Deuce and Moe, and we have yet to figure that out.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah, someone walked by, Deuce and Moe! And we looked around like, where are they? And, is he...
Sam, the hell are you talking about?
So it was a whole process trying to figure out which one was Deuce and which one was Mo, and we couldn't figure out a proper, we couldn't figure it out.
My problem is I know who's sitting in front of me, but your
the
little
screen says Casey.
Says Casey.
I know.
When I go to talk, my brain didn't work.
I got you.
Yeah.
I just guess.
No, that's fine. It's a good call. That's a good call.
It's one of them, guys.
One of D'Lo and Casey are joining us now.
Yeah. One of us.
It's the handoff. Damian, I'm happy you dropped in. We're going to do some Kings superlatives, and I would like your thoughts. Who is the Kings' best newcomer of the first half? I didn't want to say rookie because there's not a lot of those guys, but best newcomer.
Pass.
Yeah.
James?
Pass.
Yeah, like...
Chris Duarte, right?
Or is it Sasha Vezenkov? Or is it...
Is it JaVale?
It's Mason Jones.
Clearly, it's Mason Jones.
It's Mason Jones. They're putting out tweets for this kid.
MVP.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm all about. What was your former title at 95.7?
Curator of Vibes.
Yo, that might be Mason Jones. I never seen them put out a tweet for someone who was like, you know, bigging up his teammates on the bench. Like, that's awesome.
Who didn't play.
It didn't play a second.
Who has never played a second for you?
Yeah,
my favorite part. And look, here's what I want to indicate. I don't doubt that Mason Jones' vibes helped. I'm not doubting that one bit. Mike Brown wouldn't have shouted him out in a post game presser if Mason Jones was an invisible person at the end of the bench. So I get it. But when Deuce or Kenny, whichever one of you guys, posted about here's a clip of what Mason Jones did on the bench last night, and it was all very generic.
Yeah, that was Deuce. Yeah,
it was very like, okay, he was just first off the bench to high five his teammates.
Yeah.
Oh, he did a little step thing on a Euro step. Like, that's just kind of what is that just what guys do?
Yeah, his vibes.
Okay, so like I'm looking at Mason Jones' basketball reference page. I see age. I see the teams he's played for. I see games played. I see all of these things. At the end of this, there's this this column, which for him could be deleted. It could be one of those columns that you go delete column to the right. It says awards. And what I don't see there is vibes. Like, there are no awards.
Well, Wikipedia is a created page. Right in it. Go edit it and put in vibes.
Oh, see.
If anybody is listening, just go do vibes.
I'm in basketball reference. I'm just saying. Like, okay. He might be the best newcomer. I don't know.
All I know is when the coach brings it up in a post-game press conference, I'm with it. Yeah. I'm rocking with it.
That's what I'm saying. And
so Mason wins.
Deuce is in the chat. And that's what I'm saying is, like, I don't doubt. It was just... I was like, oh man, I can't wait to see like what this guy, and just it's a sign of what the Kings have not had on the bench all year, that this guy comes in and does that. And it's like, wow, How noticeably different.
So he is definitively the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Best newcomers, Mason Jones.
Well, and like, look, like Deuce is in the chat. I'm not calling Deuce out at all. I'm just saying, like, where are we going
here? It's the Kings bench. I don't doubt that having a vibes guy like that helped.
Well,
it's just that it wasn't like over the top. He was just doing basic stuff that apparently the Kings have not been doing all year.
Well, don't forget the context of the game, though. That I think is important too. The game was dragging.
Oh yeah.
Like the bench was like the play on the floor was dragging. So to have a guy, you know, jump up and celebrate the way that he did is dope.
Hmm. I love that. And honestly, if that's what you know how much I love vibes.
Mm-hmm.
If that winds up being the thing that at the end of the year the Kings have won 50 games and they go 19-9 over these last 28 and they're like, "Yep, we're the 5 seed. This is what it is." Mason Jones brought that energy. I would love that, dude.
Yeah.
The vibes curator pulled up and it turned the season around.
Yeah, no, let's also point out this is a problem that we both said Mason Jones and not Sasha or Chris Duarte or one of the other players who's actually gotten like minutes on the floor.
I totally agree. And Lorraine Fox chimes in. De'Aaron Fox has played against Mason Jones since they were in fourth grade AAU in the Dallas, Texas area. Like, this isn't a Mason Jones like thing. I'm happy that Mason Jones is getting an opportunity.
No, I feel like you're hating.
No, it does.
It's just classic ham hateration right here.
I am
shirt coming to DLoandKC.com. Ham hateration.
No, I'm all for it. I am. I'm all for like. But where is that all season long? If this team doesn't have the vibes,
ham hates fun.
If you're looking around,
ham hates
saying,
vibes.
Where is Matthew Dellavedova? Then you got a problem.
No, some
like,
people.
So
have asked.
I guess. I don't know. Sasha's getting no love. You're right.
And Sasha's not getting love.
Shout out to
sorry. Get well, Sasha.
Yep.
What about most improved?
This is ridiculous. Is it Domas?
Yes.
Like, Domas is crazy. Like it's the crazy part is Domas or De'Aaron, which is insane because those guys are all NBA players. Keegan was really Keegan on the defensive end. That's like a whole different category. But then you could say De'Aaron on the defensive end. I love Keon. Keon's my guy. Man, I'm not going to try to be smarter than the room. I'm going to say it's Domas.
I'm going to counter with Malik Monk. Because Malik last year was all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
This year he had like 5 games there in the middle where he struggled, but bounced right back. 2020.
Yeah.
So I think Malik, finding consistency for Malik was something that was a huge deal for me coming into this season. Him and Kevin both, he found it. Kevin hasn't. And that's what separates him. And that's why, you know, I think he's like clearly the sixth man of the year, but also like I think he is probably their most improved player.
Maybe I think that's probably right. The consistency has been there for Malik, and he's I think their most important player. So I'm going to make him the most improved as well. What
I
about
keep
the
looking
surprise?
To the left like Kyle is there and he's
yeah.
not. Like, I
no,
just
it's
keep
weird.
Looking at an empty chair.
Yeah, he was talking at one point and I went
sorry,
to look.
Bro.
I'm like,
yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I thought you were looking like we've got to get out.
No,
and Jesse's
I keep
not there,
looking
so you
for you
go.
And you're not there.
I think we got minute 15.
I'm over here. Okay, let's rip through these last two. Biggest surprise for you from the Kings this year?
The inconsistency.
For a player.
Oh, for a player? I would say just as a team as a whole, the biggest surprise that Harrison Barnes and Kevin Huerter took like philosophical vacations for 35 games. That's the biggest surprise. It's not a good thing. It's a bad thing.
A league-leading triple-double numbers from Domantas Sabonis.
Like, and the double-doubles.
I mean, like, he's actually playing better than he did last year. And he was really, really good last year. That's surprising to me. I thought De'Aaron could... I always think De'Aaron could elevate. I didn't realize Domas could get better.
Mm, yeah.
Like,
to
this degree.
And he's continued to get better, even like, De'Aaron was MVP candidate for the first 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and then he had that lull where he just was more just ordinary De'Aaron, and Domas continued playing it at that level. And you saw when you get both of them playing at MVP levels, the Kings are really, really hard to beat. And if they get that down the stretch with some Keegan, I think they'll be
unless they're playing Phoenix. Then they score 70, make it 90 with Malik and lose. But I'm over that.
Yep.
Because they beat Denver, so it's okay.
You sure?
Yeah.
We're all anything else? Anything else before we go?
No, I'm good.
All right. D'Lo and Casey coming up next. Appreciate you guys.
You're coming back, right?
Yeah, I'm sticking around. Yeah. Mm. I'll be in there 12:15.
Excellent.
I got a little surprise for you guys coming up.
I love surprises. Love surprises.
We talked about it. It's on. We're good. On ESPN 1320.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.